Beijing lobs a fresh trade threat at America. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig, in for Anu Anand. Good morning. China has threatened to cut off supplies of its rare earth metals as new leverage in its ongoing trade spat with the United States. The country dominates global production of the metals that make up modern electronics like phones, wind turbines, and crucially, defense equipment. The BBC's Su Ping Chan has more.
From the cell phone in your pocket to electric cars and X-ray machines, rare earth elements are part of what makes modern gadgets tick. China produced 78% of the stuff last year and has managed to corner the market through a centuries-long focus on exploring and extracting them. Contrary to the label, rare earths actually aren't very rare. Some of them are more common than silver and copper. But Caroline Bain at Capital Economics says China's ability to provide a cheap and reliable source makes finding Plan B a problem.
It does take time for mines to come on stream, so the supply problem can't be dealt with quickly. And they are very toxic to produce, so that it's also not a terribly desirable industry from the environmental sense.
For anyone guessing how this trade spat ends, Ryan Castillo at Adamas Intelligence says there are lessons from the past.
There's only really been one major supply disruption within the past decade or so, and that occurred around 2010 when China temporarily cut off supplies to Japan. What we saw then was that there was no viable Plan B, and it really did temporarily paralyze Japanese end users. They ultimately took a strong lesson from that incident, and Japan has since been one of the most active countries in helping develop other sources of supply.
Both say that this threat is just that, a threat, for now at least. But if the US-China trade war does escalate, ultimately it'll be the consumer who pays at the cash register. In London, I'm the BBC's Su Ping Chan for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Worries about an intensifying trade spat between the world's two biggest economies are sending stocks lower all around the world. Hong Kong's Hang Seng ended down 0.5%, while major averages in Europe are down at least 1%. To Venezuela now, where the country's central bank unexpectedly released data showing the economy contracted more than 22% in the third quarter of 2018. That's from the year prior. Andres Abadia is an economist at Pantheon Macroeconomics. He explains these kinds of statistics are usually closely guarded, and the last time growth figures were published was in 2015.
We weren't expecting that the central bank was going to publish these numbers. This data shows the bleak state of the economy. The only problem that I see with the numbers is that they are suggesting that the inflation right now is around 40%. This obviously underestimates the real situation. I still believe that Venezuela's inflation is running about 1,000%.
And even the IMF is predicting it will reach a staggering 10,000,000% by the end of this year. So do you think this will put more focus on the dire need for economic reforms in Venezuela?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. The economy is collapsing. Imports are, you know, in historic lows. And the situation is tragic in Venezuela. We have seen that, you know, many people have fled the country. And now, at some point, there should be like a government change, and it's taking more time than we have expected.
So why did the central bank publish this data?
I don't really know. I mean, it's kind of baffling thing that they are trying to portray an economy that is improving or is stabilizing. But nobody believes these numbers.
Do you think it'll take the publication of more data like this, even on the effect of rolling power blackouts or the health sector collapse, to really move the needle on the ongoing power struggle between President Maduro and interim president, as many see him, Juan Guaido?
It needs to get more international pressure to see a regime change. And it won't happen as long as the military, you know, supports Maduro.
Andres Abadia. Today, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari begins his second and final term as leader of Africa's most populous nation. He vowed this week to crack down on corruption and create 20 million new jobs. But in a nation dealing with 23% unemployment, high inflation, and sluggish growth, are promises to kickstart the economy enough as he's sworn in for another 4 years? Maya Famidu is a venture capitalist at Ingressive Capital in Lagos. She talks about the challenges she's seen just getting business off the ground.
So initially, it was a lot around perception. A lot of our work has to do with international partnerships and engaging the top echelon of businesses from around the world to come and enter and operate in Nigeria and elsewhere. So it was a lot around perception. our first couple trips, a lot of the fears of the travelers were, will we have armed guards? Will there be bulletproof vehicles? Because the perception of Boko Haram and its nearness to Lagos, which is not true. So those were some of the factors that we were dealing with. As far as more recently, with technology investing on the continent, some of the challenges have been around this sort of ever-changing regulation, specifically when it comes to financial services and other sectors where the government is starting to realize there's a lot of development.
So if we look at the broader Nigerian economy, we know that the country is dealing with high unemployment of around 23%. I wonder if you have a perspective of how that's changed young people's aspirations for their expectations about what kind of jobs they hope to secure, what they hope to do, how they define what success is.
Yeah, in a couple ways. Sub-Saharan Africa for women has the highest rates of entrepreneurship in the world, and also just for sole proprietorships has one of the highest rates of entrepreneurship in the world. But I think with this recent development of technology and entrepreneurship, it's certainly changed from take this product, add some value and resell it, to this more innovation and critical analysis, and also looking from creating businesses for a few people around you to globally scalable, or thinking sort of macroeconomically about the opportunities. So I'm seeing a lot of people come with pitch decks to us for fashion type businesses, for small trade based businesses in the agriculture space, those sort of things.
We saw the president this week actually vow to create 20 million new jobs in Nigeria. Does it really matter? Are people opting more for entrepreneurship anyway, so they'll create their own jobs?
Private sector is booming, especially targeting the youth populations. People can learn whatever they want online. Developers can become developers simply by taking courses online. Designers can become designers simply by taking courses online. So I think that this new wave of employment and opportunity that we're seeing in the private sector without government intervention.
Maya Famadou speaking to me from Lagos. And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.